Welcome back to The Drop. This is Michael Saramella here to talk about everything that happened this week in surfing. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys about a little discount code that we're running for our loyal podcast listeners. If you go to sign up for Stab Premium, you select the annual option and you type in code DROPWALLETS. That's one word, DROPWALLETS, plural. You're going to get 10% off Stab Premium, and let me tell you, it is well worth it because we're about to drop the next episode of How Surfers Get Paid. It is a kind of a sequel to the women's that we did a couple weeks ago. It talks about how they, you know, they went through this whole renaissance and then they turned into these money-making machines. The women absolutely figured out their own path in surfing. And what they're doing now, it's honestly, it's more lucrative to be a female pro surfer than a male in a lot of ways. We're going to break it all down. That's coming soon. But this week, we're going to be talking about the best surfing I've ever seen with Nate Lawrence. It is from a trip that we all know and love, but getting to hear some extra backstories around it is really, really cool. We're also going to talk about the WSL's three piece of news this week. One is about Kelly, one is about Snapper, and one is about wild cards. We're going to talk about some Snowbro stuff. We're going to talk about the cut and where it really came from. It's not where you think. It's actually not the WSL. It might be somebody else's fault. It might be somebody you know, actually. And at the end, Stace and I are going to sit back and chat about the Challenger Series opening event at Snapper Rocks. Stace is obviously on the ground. He's going to provide some insider details, some sense of how to pick a wave at Snapper, and so much more. So let's go ahead and drop in. You know what's, in my opinion, better than wave pools?
The ocean?
No, sometimes. The ocean's been bad since I got back from Bristol. Going to Stonehenge alone.
Oh, you went to Stonehenge?
Alone.
Just walked out
just
there?
Just me.
And did you figure it out?
Well, I listened to some podcasts about it on the way, driving around. But I'm not sure if I fully cracked the code, Mikey. There's still a lot of unanswered questions there.
What did you learn?
Well, I learned all about the Celts. Not that they were the ones who built it, but I learned about the position of the sun at the winter solstice and the summer solstice. Apparently the winter one was more important. There's evidence of them gathering a lot in that area for every winter solstice. And the way that one of the things lines up, it's like perfectly, you could see the sun, I think at sunset then. One sunrise, one sunset, but it's on the same line. I learned how they got the rocks up there, or how they think they got the rocks up there. Some of them came from Wales, like 200 miles away. Fascinating place, Mikey.
Wales were carrying these rocks, is what you're telling me.
Wales fucking carried the rocks. And now they're complaining about SeaWorld, like they had it way worse back then. Pussies.
But really, how was your wave pool experience? How was the wave?
It was fun. It was pleasant. I don't think that you could like have a bad time in a wave pool. It'd be very weird.
You can't have a bad time. It would be unless you're one of those people who just has to bring their like ocean negativity elsewhere. Like they just carry it with them throughout life. You know those people.
But I can't imagine. I guess I have limited experience in a wave pool, but I've never encountered anything negative in one in terms of like interactions in the water. Have you?
Oh, I've seen parents yelling at children in wave pools, telling them to land airs.
No way. Are you being serious?
Yes. Yeah.
Fuck. No, there's none of that. there was just a grown man trying some chop hops, but that was it.
All right. Well, on the flip side, the real ocean waves have been incredible by me lately. So that's been a nice little treat. But there's been a lot of other things going on in the world of surfing besides just our own little pastimes that we do between these podcasts. So should we chat about it?
Let's get there, Mikey. Best surfing I've ever seen, Nate Lawrence. So, the good old reckless isolation trip. So, Mikey, the year was 2020. The world was locked down, and a couple gentlemen from San Clemente decided that they had some serious interest in investing in Indonesian surf camps or something. That's, I believe, how they got in. We ran a story around that time, which we actually plucked from the Wall Street Journal, but they said that only 43 international travelers visited Bali around that time. And so
that was the official number. We also know Kelly Slater happened to be one of those.
It was so funny. We could pretty much count them. We didn't make the point to do that. But
The Reckless Isolation made so much noise when this thing came out. I mean, I think there's a lot of COVID projects, especially out of Australia, with travel being restricted there. Nobody pulled off anything quite like this, and I think staff did a great job of covering it while it went down. But it almost feels like it's far away enough now where it was really fun to revisit. And I feel like in this best serving I've ever seen, Nate pulled some. He was talking about a few things I didn't really notice the first go around. Like the first two names he mentioned this thing are just Griffin and Crosby. Like he was talking about how hard those guys were battling and how much they impressed him. There's one point towards the end where he just uses the term aggression to describe Griffin surfing, and it made me realize that that is a trait I really like to see in surfing. I think there's just so it's just so fun to watch somebody really fucking have at a wave, and you see, especially in that wave, is scary to most people. Like I think that's why Andy surfing was so appealing, but you really see Griffin and Crosby going hard here, and we get back on the boat. We get back on the boat for 20 days on Father Colohe's tab.
23. It
20.
started as 11 days and
He
then they
just
extended
kept
it to
going.
15 and they extended it to 23 and they were not drinking beers. In fact, they traded all of their beers for ice cream with other boats. So, yeah, it was a very different trip, but they just kept scoring. Like, I mean, you can't say it enough. This is truly like the greatest modern day surf adventure, I think, because you basically got to have all these waves that back in the early 2000s or even the 90s were like the pinnacle of surfing, and at that point there were still not that many people going there, but you know, by 2020 they're completely blown out, right? Like you go surf any good day at HT's and Nate Lawrence even says it, you know, if you're lucky there's two or three boats there, if you're unlucky there's nine boats there, 12 surfers per boat, you can do the math. But they went to the surf all these waves in their most pristine pumping form with nobody around. So I just the fact that they pulled it off, they jumped through all the hoops. They managed every little, you know, difficulty that every other surfer said was too much. They didn't even try. And Kolohe footed the bill for all of it, which is one, incredible. And two, it's gotta hurt a little bit when Nate Lawrence says that Griffin and Crosby did the best surfing that he's seen on the trip.
It's got to sting a little bit. It's got to sting a little bit. He says that he shot seven, he handed over seven or eight hard drives of footage. Just a wild amount. You'd have to imagine there are some nice terabytes in there for them to go through. Has a funny story about flying a drone when instructed not to. And then, I mean, like you said, we're so used to seeing all these lineups so crowded now that the drone footage is just so compelling. It's like, they paired it well with music too. It's just almost like something spooky about it. You're like, holy shit, it's the most beautiful looking place in the world with the most incredible wave, and there's nobody around. It's kind of like a weird apocalyptic vibe in the beginning, which the drone really brings out. So, yeah, this was a good one, Mikey. This was a good best surfing that Nate Lawrence has seen.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he caveats it in the beginning saying, like, the best session I've ever seen was actually Dane in Japan for Dear Suburbia, which fucking fair. But he said, this moment in time that we had in the Mentawai, there will never be anything else like it. And the surfing that I saw there across all these different waves that are like the marquee waves and then a few that are lesser known but actually had a really big impact on the film as well. He's like, yeah, just watching those guys, seeing the level. It was right there actually that he realized how gnarly Crosby was, and that he was going to be a force on tour as well, which he's just obviously made the cut as a rookie after a couple of really good results. So, yeah, obviously, this is all footage that we've seen before, but what really provides the value here is Nate Lawrence explaining it through his eyes, through his lens, and just adding a lot of additional details that you wouldn't have found out by watching the film. So, really informative, really entertaining as well. What we've realized through this series is how good of storytellers all these filmers and photographers are. Like, they should be the ones in front of the camera, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, best surfing I've ever seen with Nate Lawrence. Go give it a watch.
I want to kick it off with Snapper returning to the CT in 2025. We are about to see the Challenger Series. Bonsoy, get your dairy-free milks out, folks. It's coming around. It's about to start, but let's focus on that. We'll get through, but what are your thoughts on Snapper coming back?
I mean, so happy about it. it, like we talk about the tour right now, and especially in the front half of the tour, there aren't many waves that are really geared toward performance surfing. Pipeline, obviously not. Sunset, you know the drill. Portugal has its moments for sure, but it's still, it's a really tricky wave. Like it's hard no matter what the conditions are. And then you go over to Bells, which is kinda, but it's also still like this older version of performance surfing. And then Margies, which we just saw again, it's like, it's waves that are, I don't know how you would describe them. It's almost like, yeah, like an older style of surfing prevails, which is fun to watch in its own way. Obviously, the last day at Margaret's as well, we saw a lot of progression in that. But for the most part, none of these waves you would consider like rippable. They're not a spot that normal people would be excited to go surf because it looks so fun. And that is exactly what Snapper is. It is a sand bottom, barreling, rippable right point. And I know that you probably take contention with that last point there, Buckley, that it's a right. But I'm so happy to see it back on tour. To me, it's the best event. Granted, you know, you need waves, but I think when there are waves, it's the best event in the Aussie leg. And yeah, I'm really excited to see it back. But it, you know, speaking on the front half of the cut, it's actually interesting where they're going to fit this event in, because what we know is that it's been locked in until 2028, along with Bells and Margies. So there's going to be a three-stop Aussie leg, kind of the traditional way. But we know that Margies is going to be that event where the cut happens every single year per the negotiation that was done by Brody Carr, which is coming up in a piece that we're going to talk about shortly. So Easter in 2024, this year, was March 31st. Next year, it's going to be on April 20th. So that's like 3 weeks of a difference of when Bells is going to run, because it's always centered around Easter. So that means in theory, they could put Snapper before Bells and do the traditional 1-2-3 in that way. However, would that make it so that there are six events pre-cut, which may or may not be a good thing? The other option, of course, is to go after Margs after the cut. But yeah, a lot still to be seen, but very interesting times for the WSL. And I think we could probably say all around this is a positive thing, no?
Yeah. I mean, as a goof, you have to bring up that it's a right, and you have to bring up that it's been a right-heavy tour. That said, Snapper is a wave where I feel like it's kinder to goofy footers than, say, Bells. You know, you had people like Owen Wright won there, Matt Wilkinson won there, and I know goofs have won at Bells.
Medina.
Too. Medina goes well there. I could see most of the tour's goofy footers now, like, think about a guy like Ramsey there. Connor O'Leary, even. It's a wave that I feel like it suits a lot of people well, hence what you said. it's not.
I think Nick Vasicek has to be one of the best surfers out there, full stop.
Oh, he's fucked up. What he does is, I don't understand it.
I want him to get the wild. I know it should probably go to somebody who's like young and chasing the Challenger series or whatever, but like, fuck, I'd love to see Vasa against the CT guys. That would be so good.
Especially if it's pumping. So I'll call it a win. Still a lack of lefts, but I think it's a win. Like you said, it's just rippable surfing. And I think I've been to the event a few times. It was at the start of the year. And it's just a beautiful place to be. Always fun waves. I feel like it's an event that most people like. I feel like there's some spots on tour that feel a little bit more drudgy. That one, I think, is everybody's happy to be there, especially because it's such a beautiful wave. And it is one of those waves where you're not going to surf it uncrowded. Like, you could probably surf main break pretty uncrowded if you want it. It's yours. You know, you're going to get waves, but that thing's always going to be pretty hard to surf. Whereas in competition, getting that window to yourself. So we'll call the win. Another one on the docket. WSL announces season wild cards. So Joao Chianca, Lakey Peterson, Steph Gilmore, and Mikey, help me out here.
Felipe Toledo.
Oh, of course.
Obviously, of course. Steph and Felipe, their wild cards were announced as soon as they withdrew from the 2024 CT. That's obviously based on their past performances, both world champions, et cetera, et cetera. So there were only two spots left to give for the WSL, and they took stock. They stated their criteria, which says prior competitive performance, such as world titles, CT and Challenger Series rankings, and event results, as well as medical evaluation, will be taken into consideration. So after considering those criteria, They have deemed that Joao Chianca, who obviously finished fourth in the world last year and then got severely injured at Backdoor before the start of the 2024 season. Remember, Buck did that interview with him a couple of weeks ago where he explained his recovery and everything. It sounds like Joao will also be competing in the event at Snapper. So he was a pretty obvious choice for the WSL based on how well he did last year and how badly he was injured. Therefore, he couldn't compete this year. And on the women's side, it was sort of a totally opposite pick. It was Lakey Peterson, who that's basically like Sally was last year, is sort of just like a legacy pick. Lakey's been on tour for such a long time, since 2012, actually. And she'd only missed the top 10 three times in her career. She has six CT wins, and her best ever result on tour was a runner-up finish to Steph in 2018. So that was just sort of one of those ones where they needed to fill that last spot, and Lakey has put in the yards, she's put in the years, she's done really well, and yeah, I guess she's kind of earned her wild card in that way. So they will be additions to the 2025 CT.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. These get tricky when there's multiple options. Then it's always, you know, there's an angle, it gets more subjective, and there's arguments to be made about somebody else, but in a year like this, I think all these picks make perfect sense, so... Well done, Waz. We'll take it. Kelly Slater will surf in Tahiti and Fiji CT events, and he's bringing a secret weapon with him. That weapon isn't so secret, Mikey. It's small. You might miss it. But it's not secret. It's Glenn Microhall.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was just, like, fascinating to me. We got on the phone with Micro to discuss what it's like coaching Kelly Slater, and he's been coaching him... He said that the conversation started in Hawaii. I don't know if he's been directly coaching him for the entire season. It sounds like it may have started more in Bells and filtered into Margaret's. But it's just fascinating to me that Kelly Slater, at 52 years old, with 32 years of experience on tour, 11 world titles, 56 event wins, like the fact that he cares so much about his craft that he wants to invest in a coach so that he can put on as good of performances as possible in his last year on tour, like it just goes to show you his character and his desires and that the flame just still burns that strongly. So I thought that was fascinating. And Glenn gave us some really good insight into what it's like coaching Kelly and what Kelly is looking for from somebody in Glenn's position.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fascinating to read because with these coaches that are, we did something with Andy King who coaches Medina, and he's coached Mick for a while. And I think there are some surf coaches that are very technical that say, hey, move your body more like this. It'll be better for you. And I think when you get to a certain level, like even Medina's level, King, he was like, oh, I'm not going to tell him what to do. Like, he's got that figured out. But just to help him out, be a sounding board, kind of just have somebody in his corner. Sounds like Micro's quite similar to Kelly. Just, you know, he has a point being Kelly's human too. Everybody needs a sounding board. And also just the most interesting line to me was about how his equipment might look to the judges. That was
interesting to me too, like and maneuver choice as well within that, because we talk about it all the time, you know, with Stab in the Dark, like what is feel and what is real, and what feels good to you may not always be the thing that looks the best, or even if it looks good, it may not be the thing that's going to generate the types of scores that you want, because competitive surfing is one very specific form of surfing wherein, yes, the judging is subjective, but also there are very clear things that they're looking for. That's why a criteria exists. And so the type of turn that might feel the best might not generate the, you know, the greatest amount of points. And Kelly's surfing, I would say, is very unique. Like, he draws very different lines to most people, to anyone, really. And it's so fun to watch. But it doesn't always mean that he's going to be getting eights and nines for it. Like, it's more entertaining, I would say, than some waves that hit excellent on the scale, but they can't give it those types of scores because he's not really hitting the criteria, which it's kind of silly at the end of the day. Like, we're there to be entertained. And if somebody is able to perform things that nobody else can, should they not be rewarded for it? But I guess that's why someone like Chippa Wilson isn't on tour either, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's especially interesting with Kelly because he's been on tour for so long. He's been through so many eras of surfing. And so his might not look exactly what people 20 years younger than him are doing now, but it's still really fucking hard. You know, it's still very good. So, really interesting read there. Is that it for WAS News, Mikey? Are we through it? Is there
We
another?
do have another little thing about the WSL, but it's more of a think piece by the greatest thinker in the game, Paul Evans.
The cut wasn't the surf fans' idea, but it might be our fault. Paulie, is he inspired lately? Paul, are you inspired? What's happening up there in Capreton? Writing his Kelly manifesto, writing this thing, which for I think the first maybe 1/5 of it, 20%, it's about a soccer game that happened many years ago.
Oh, Batty, poor Batty.
Oh, poor Batty. But a great read. I really enjoyed this. It's quite a reflection on why we watch surfing, especially in this time of a mid-year cut when there's weird shit happening. The way the thing that we watch introduces some big changes. And yeah, Paul had a good crack at this. Mikey, what are your thoughts on the cut? Are you a fan? Are you against it? Are you for it?
I am a fan. I think the cut is a good thing for the, if not for the sport, then for the fans, which is really the point of this article. He has a short paragraph in here that I think succinctly sort of wraps up his argument. And he says, "Modern sport has become partly about the action, but mainly dramas and athletic rigs. The fuss is the entire point. Victory or defeat, life or death, triumph or tragedy, make or break, just make it interesting." And the larger point here is that the world has changed in very many ways, but one of the biggest ones is in how people are able to consume entertainment. So back in the day, people used to tune in to live sporting events all the time because, frankly, they didn't have that many other options. They didn't have YouTube, they didn't have Instagram, they didn't have TV that they could stream and control when things were running and when they weren't. So when a live sporting event was on, it was like everything else stopped and everybody focused on that. And you know, nowadays it's completely different. We can watch whatever we want, whenever we want. And in order for live sports or live anything to provide value, it needs to provide entertainment on par with or greater than our other options. And surfing, frankly, it doesn't really do that. And one of his biggest arguments there is there's very little direct interplay between the combatants, right? Like in fighting, you are literally fighting another person. It's entertaining, it's quick, it's to the point. Somebody may get knocked out, somebody may die. Humans have loved that shit forever, right? But with surfing, the heats are long, they're primarily nothing is really happening, and even when it does happen, it's like this weird turn-taking thing where there's very little like one person is actually doing something to confront the other. The only time it ever really happens is in the beginning of the heat when there's the little priority squabble, who's going to get the first wave, and then potentially a paddle battle or something like that, right? But there's very little like one surfer does something to directly affect another surfer. And therefore, there's not this like same level of drama that there is in other sports or in other forms of entertainment. So he's basically building the argument that based on these premises, we need drama inbuilt to surfing in different ways, in ways that are more tied to the format and the structure of the tour and the events. And that is exactly what the cut provides. So yeah, what's your take on that, Buck?
I think I've been against the cut in the past, and I feel like most people have been. I think something changed this year. I felt like I saw way more cut positivity. I think it was inspired especially by performances by people like Seth Nunes and Tyler Wright, where it was like, oh shit, we just got to watch these people have to do something and then go and do it, you know? And so I felt like I saw way more positivity about it this year than I have in years past. Paul's a really good line in here, quite simple, but I love it. Just what matters to us is that it matters to them. I think that pretty much hits the nail on the head for me. You don't want to watch somebody do something that they don't really give a fuck about. Like, you don't want to watch a heat that's in the fourth event of the year of a 10 event year where if they lose, yeah, they're going to be off it, but it's not really going to change the day for them. But if it's like has serious implications about their contracts and what the rest of their year looks like, everything, it's way more fun to watch. There's also a great tidbit in here. You hinted at it earlier, but he talked to Brody Carr for this piece, who was the former CEO of the then ASP at the time of the One World ranking, which I'll touch on in a second. But Brody Carr is heading up WA Tourism, Western Australia Tourism, when they negotiated for the event. And Brody has this great line about not liking the cut, but also negotiating for, like, putting it in the terms of the event that, like, for this Margie's event and for the money that they're paying, it has to be the event before the cut. So I think that's pretty funny too. Like, I don't like it, but if it's got to happen, let's have it happen here.
It's a recognition of the human condition, right? And yeah, he says he doesn't like it. So does everyone on Instagram. Like, we posted this story on Instagram and Peter King says, this is the stupidest take yet. And there are hundreds of other commenters who are saying things along the similar vein. But guess what? I guarantee you they're all tuning in to watch because it makes it entertaining. Like, we, Stab, are in the storytelling business, and one of the biggest things that we've learned is, like, storytelling requires a question, a conflict, and a solution. And now the WSL has three of those within a given season. The first one is the mid-year cut, which the first five events are all gearing up toward that. Who is going to position themselves to make it? It comes down to this great final moment, which we just saw in Western Australia, and you have some people in absolute, you know, jubilance and others in complete despair. Then you get the second one at the last event of the year, which this year is going to be at Cloudbreak for people trying to make the top five. Last year, you had that incredible moment between Gabriel Medina and Jack Robinson, who in the final together, whoever won was going to get the last spot in the top five. And then obviously you have the WSL finals, which is like the biggest one of all. So they have really tuned into, like, what keeps people hanging on, basically cliffhangers throughout the year. And then you have these moments where it all, like, gets released, and then you come back in because there's something else to look forward to. So I think the cut is brilliant. I think Paul summed it up beautifully here. And all the people who say that they're mad about it and blah, 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 I don't know. I just guarantee you that because of the cut, they are more invested in watching at least the first half, and especially Margaret River. So you can say you dislike it, but just like Burger King learned when they listened to their audience that they wanted salads and then they made a bunch of salads and nobody bought them, what people say they want and what they actually want is very different. And the only thing you really need to look at when you want to know what people actually want is where they spend their money and where they spend their time. And yeah, I think right now we're at a point where if people are going to spend their time on surfing, it needs stakes, and these are the stakes, and I think it fucking works.
Well, speaking of investing time, there was something that came across our desks a few months ago, Mikey, I'm sure you remember it, where you'd have to be pretty depraved to do what they did, but they looked at an entire CT year, that year was 2019, because they wanted to see how pressure affects surfers, and we did a story on that, but we also pulled some other insights out of, they literally went back and watched every single minute of CT surfing and filed each wave in this massive spreadsheet. Pretty fascinating. One thing we learned is that the average score in 2019, which I don't think things have changed radically since then, was a 3.03 on a wave. That was all up, the average score. Another thing, they actually cited this from a different study from somebody who did the same thing, but we learned that the last study that we know about that was done on this showed that 4% of a heat is actually people riding waves. That's it. So with those numbers, you're going to watch 2 hours of surfing, get maybe 5 minutes of real-time waves. And again, that's with an average score of 3. So any way to introduce drama in a fucking situation like that, I think we should celebrate.
All right, coming up next, we have Stacey Galbraith, hot off a trip to Margaret River where he absolutely dominated the mic. And unfortunately, he's been, I guess, missed the cut. He's been relegated to the CS, but he hasn't lost any of his energy or spark. So he's going to break down Snapper with me. Let's get into it.
Mikey C, long time no speak. Kind of feels similar to how I'll be treating Kelly Slater this week.
Yeah, wow, that is kind of weird, huh? It's like you guys just broke up, but then you're just gonna, like, be in the same place with all the same people, and you kind of have to just, like, pretend like it didn't happen.
I saw him at D-Bar yesterday, and Mikey Wright and I were just standing there checking the surf, pondering, and then he walked down, like, two boards under his arm, like, fully looking like he was getting ready for a comp, and like, well, you're doing it, and he still, in his Kelly masterful way, did not give me an answer, and I'm like, forecast's gotten better. It was looking small and south. Now it's looking sort of small and east, which is a way better direction. Like, you know, I don't know. I'd do it if I was you, freshly retired. Like, I was like, the last day looks good. Like, if you make it to the finals, old bloke, you'll get pitted behind the rock, maybe. Like,
yeah. So obviously, we're about to talk about the Challenger Series event that's taking place at Snapper Rocks. But I want to know your feelings on the news that Snapper just got added as a CT again for the next 4 years, starting in 2025.
So stoked. Like, over the moon. We've been so lucky with the Challenger event, the waves that we've had. And even again, this week looks really fun again. But, yeah, to have Snapper on the cards with, like, a select window and a really good time frame of year, like, we've seen how good the wave can get. And the other thing is too, I think people like coming to the Gold Coast. It generally brings a pretty good vibe. So yeah, the whole event in itself is insane. So yeah, I'm stoked for what it does, like, for the town and for the Groms. Like, I don't know, I still get that feeling now watching, yeah, like, crew waxing up with their new boards and surfing a high performance wave. You just get to see how hard everyone's been working on their wave face surfing, which is the, you know, I think the most relatable thing for most of us to watch as surfers. So yeah, it's sick.
You're obviously there. You probably are hearing more things than we are. Have they made any sort of reference to where this is going to sit on the schedule next year?
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation. It all comes down to Bells, and Bells being run over the Easter holiday has been since the dawn of time and will continue to be over those dates. The Easter break is a lot later in 2025. Which will, you think, would push Margie's back, which then offers a few opportunities maybe to slide in Snapper either before or after.
This is exactly what I said with Buck. Those are...
Oh, right. Well, it was almost like I've already listened to your podcast. The one thing that, again, just speculation, and I don't want to stick my neck too far out here, but there's been a lot of chat around extending the cut to more events in the calendar season. So a lot of us have kind of been getting hung up on, like, oh, well, if they run five events, then Snapper might be after the cut. But if they extend the cut to, say, six or seven events, I'm not too sure where that's going to land, then it could well and truly fall in the first part of the season, which I think would be sick.
I mean, I understand that from the surfer's point of view, but from a marketing point of view, the two-thirds year cut just doesn't really hit.
Yeah, I know. It's a tricky one, and I haven't been privileged to any of those conversations. And even as far as, like, Snapper being on the calendar, I think the league did a really good job of, like, keeping it out of the public view for as long as possible before they announced it. And it's the same about this cut situation. I really don't know what they're going to do as far as how many events they're going to have. And fuck, whatever they do, people get paid to make those decisions, and I'll just follow along happily.
Let's talk about the Challenger Series now. We are starting off at Snapper. There are going to be six events this year. So Snapper, Narrabeen, Bolito, Huntington Beach, Ribera, and Sakurama. There are 80 men and 48 women in each event, and at the end of the year, they're going to count their top four events. Is that right, Stacey?
Correct, Mikey. Top four.
Okay, and then we're going to have 10 men qualify from that and just five women. We've talked about it before, how insane that is and the level of consistency that you need to make the cut as a woman. We've had multiple CS event winners that have not qualified in that year. So, yeah, it's really, really tough on the women's side. But coming into Snapper, Stace, you already gave us a little bit of a forecast preview, but how's the bank looking? What can we actually expect to be watching for the next week or so?
High performance surfing, 12 majors per wave, as fun as waves get.
Yeah, it, right.
Nah, there might be a bit of mayo on that, but it's going to be really fun. We were down there this morning looking at it. What is it today? It's Friday. So by the time you listen to this, probably day one will be underway or halfway underway. And yeah, the forecast is looking really fun. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be like tubing behind the rock, but the sand down the line is amazing. And you know, I think that there might be the odd barrel day here and there, but I think the focus of the event will be, like, you know, waist to chest to head high running, peeling rights, and yeah, just whatever you imagine up on a wave, you're going to be able to let it all go.
So kind of like last year then is kind of what I'm picturing.
I think a little bit bigger than last year. Last year was a little on the smaller side to start the event, whereas this kind of comes in with a bit more kind of wave height throughout the whole year. Last year was like a meter, 1.1, 1.2 meters, whereas every day this window looks like 1.3, 1.4, and a little bit more than that. So, yeah, and like I said, the direction's really good, so we're cheering.
So you're obviously around a lot of these surfers. Some are on the Quicksilver team with you, and you're just generally connected. So what are people riding? Are we talking like just pure high-performance shortboards, or are some of them going to something a little bit shorter, maybe a little bit wider, just to, you know, help with some of the flat spots or some of the smaller waves?
I'd say the most common trait of what people do to their boards when they come here is just put more flip in the tail, because you can. You don't really have to worry about getting across a dead section as much as other waves. And even a slopey wave at Snapper still has like a nice kind of pace to it, so you can kind of still hold your speed through cutbacks and slower moments in the wave. So yeah, definitely just like sharpening up the flip in the tail, and maybe adding a little more concave, just so you can bite in and have like heaps of hold and heaps of drive, because like generating your own speed doesn't really, it's not really something you need to do out here.
All right. We talked about this a little bit last week, or I guess it was actually this week when we talked, but about how it's hard to just outsurf people in the Challenger Series, especially in those four-man heats. So is this really kind of like, do you see this more as a wave catching contest or as a performance contest?
It's definitely a wave selection contest. So you still need to be on the better waves. The hard thing with the four-person heats is that you're limited to those opportunities. In the CTs, where it's man-on-man, you can kind of have a fumble in your rotation and then wait your turn again. Whereas Snapper, if you wait your turn and you fuck your first wave, oh, good luck. It's just a hard wave to like fight back without priority, just due to the length of ride. Like you could surf your heart out on a wave and not get more than a five just because the wave doesn't allow it. But you still need to either paddle back out or do a run around and it takes you out of the water or away from the peak. Whereas like, you know, as opposed to like a beach break in a QS, that's going to be a wave catching contest. If you're a great surfer, you can just like, you know, ride whatever wave and do 10 airs and you'll be fine. But the Snapper, you still need to be on the better wave.
And when you talk about the better wave, and you know, it's Snapper, it's obviously it can be a very long wave. Are you looking for the obvious ones, the ones that stand up out the back, or are you having people look for kind of the more interesting looking ones that could have like a crazy double up down the line?
Have charged good money for this in the past, Mikey, but not anymore. You want a wave that doesn't break. So like if you're paddling into a wave and it's already broken, you're kind of thinking that it might have missed the moment of really good energy, and you can see them coming from a long way behind the rock. Whereas with this direction of swell, you want to be paddling into a lump that like you can barely catch. And then more often than not, if you can see that ridge down the line kind of lining up towards, you know, Currumbin and Chugan, then you can just see this long piece of ocean. You've kind of got to go against your instincts, because if you're from a place that doesn't have these long points, which, you know, is basically every beach around the world, you think, oh, that wave, I'm not going to make it around that, or it's going to run off too fast. But yeah, Snapper's just got a beautiful way when the sand's good to just run off at its own pace and you can do your thing.
Got it. Okay. Well, I hope some competitors are listening to this. They just got some free advice from the coach. So, all right. How about any words on the ground that are worth sharing? Any little rumor, gossip that you've been hearing or seeing, or anything that somebody like myself or anybody listening to this podcast wouldn't know and would like to know?
They would dearly love Griffin Colapinto to surf in the event, as would I, because I like watching him surf. But Griffin's too kind.
I saw Jack.
He has declined a wild card spot.
Jack's on the list.
I think a lot of people put their names in the ring and then make a decision on the swell. But Griffin in particular, who's here right now and could easily stay, he's really mindful of taking opportunities off people. Similar to Kanoa. Kanoa had a really good interview on the site a couple of years ago where he spoke about this and the Challenger Series and you know what it means to kind of be on the CT and how hard it is to get there. Yeah, so we won't see Griffin this week. We very likely will see Kelly. And then I would say Robbo's a 50-50. Seen Giachianca warming up. He's looking really good and just stoked to see him, you know, happy and healthy and surfing so well after what was a pretty heavy accident. Yeah, other than that, Mikey, that's pretty much it from on the ground for the time being.
Okay, all right. Well, we're about to get into some underdogs and overdogs for this event, but just who's been looking good in your eyes? Not necessarily who you think is going to win the event, but like who have you just been impressed by being around, checking whatever clips, or hopefully seeing some stuff in person?
Yeah, obviously, full disclosure, I'm his team manager, but I think Joel Vaughan in the last 6 months has just gotten like a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, and he's looks a totally different surfer than 12 months ago. You know, when you're that age, 18, 19, 20, you're building and growing so quickly that I think that, you know, it's not a surprise to say that, but yeah, just surfing with him this morning, it's like...
Have you had him on the escargot diet?
What about him? I've had him on the meat pie diet. Oh, stab hype.
Nibbler, get it in.
Yeah, that's right. So, no, that's Huey. Huey eats the Skittles. Joel's a little more got an acquired taste after spending time with you, Mikey, but fucking don't you go throwing it around like you know the place. That was the first your first trip to Europe and probably your first block of cheese. So, yeah, come on, mate. What was that cheese you had to all eat? Right. Roquefort.
What about the women? Who's looking good for the women?
I'll be honest, I haven't really caught eye of any of the women just yet. It's been a busy couple of days for us out here, just running around the coast getting some waves with a couple of the lads. So full disclosure, I have been kind of away from the main peak, but I've always liked Amuro Suzuki at Snapper. She spent a lot of time here in between events, you know, almost qualifying, then getting the wild card when Carissa took a year off for COVID, and then kind of not getting it because COVID happened, and then Carissa came back. And I really like the way Amuro surfs. I think she's like world tour quality for sure. So I've seen some warm-up clips of her. Like, I haven't seen her surfing in person, but local lad Tim McDonald's coaching her, and I've seen some clips on his Instagram, and she's like, man, she's so powerful when she gets a hold of a wave. She's, yeah, beautiful style and great technique, and yeah, definitely I think Amuro could be deadly.
Did you just give us your underdog?
I guess I did. Yeah, she's not an overdog, that's for sure, but yeah, she's an underdog.
All right, Amuro. So I am going with, this is not like a new name, but definitely somebody who's a little bit on the younger side, but who's made a really big impact in the...
Can I guess what you're going to say?
Yeah, I would be shocked if you could pull this out, but go for it.
Oh, okay. Ellie Harrison?
No, I was not going to say Ellie Harrison. Okay, I was talking about somebody who's done very well on the USQS. And somebody from the East Coast, so I have a bit of affiliation. Zoe Benedetto. She's a young surfer from Florida, and she's just got a really like strong approach. And I think if she gets on a few good-looking right-handers, she could really rip them apart. The one thing that I'm worried about is she's from Florida, so she's used to surfing like just wind slop. And there is, like, when you brought up that thing about looking like waves that are closeouts are the good ones, like, I remember I definitely had part of that. I had that problem when I used to go to events at like Point Breaks. I would always be trying to like racing out to the shoulder and stuff, and it's like, no, you have to stay in the pocket and whack it. So I'm sure she's had plenty of experience around the world surfing all different types of waves, but I wonder if that Florida-ness, it can either make you or break you as a pro surfer, I feel.
Nah, she's going to be absolutely fine. She was one of the best surfers of the opening round last year, unfortunately, which gets a lot of people off here, is the priority. She got a pretty run-of-the-mill priority interference like against her, and that obviously takes out one wave and she was eliminated. But man, she looked so good on her scoring rides before the interference. I think that's a great pick, Mikey.
All right, so that's my lady underdog. What about your male underdog, Stacey?
Can I go with JV? I'll go with Joel Vaughan. He's my male underdog.
Yep. I like that. I like that pick a lot.
Yep.
We obviously did highway with him, and he was just like the best, most consistent surfer there by a mile. Like, it was crazy how good he is. Like, everything we did, and the waves were terrible, but no matter what we did, like, he found a barrel at 1 foot breaking on the sand onshore La Gravière at 5 a.m. after partying all night at Dick Sandbar, which was one of the challenges. It wasn't just being like rogue. It was actually like what he had to do, but fucking insane. And then we had these air competitions that he just absolutely destroyed. Like, he was just such a talented surfer. So yeah, I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, and then, I mean, should we get into some favorites, Mikey, while we're on the topic of picks?
You don't want my underdog?
Oh, male underdog. Yeah, I do. I want to hear it.
Okay, so this is I think it's an underdog still. He's never like won an event or anything like that, but he did do well at Snapper last year, and I've just seen a couple of clips of him this year, and I just think his surfing is so fast and wiry and springy, and it actually reminds me of like a smaller version, younger version of like an Owen Wright, maybe a bit of Jacob Wilcox in him as well. but it's Jet Schilling. I really like Jet's backside out at snapper, and I think he's gotten even a lot better since last year. He's gotten stronger and faster, and I think the waves are going to be pretty similar, and I think he's going to do really well.
I like that pick. Yep. Bit of new sticker confidence, current world junior champ. He was surfing real good here last year, and he's like similar to Joel Vaughan, like even in last 12 months he's gotten bigger and stronger and faster, and certainly showing all the indicators to, you know, have a good crack at making the CT.
And he's seen all his friends do it as well, so he knows it's possible. I think that's a big thing too.
Yeah, exactly. And he did have a real good chance last year going into Sakuraima to qualify, so I think it's really common to see good quality surfers take 2 years to qualify. And he could be in that story for sure.
All right, now let's get into some overdogs.
This is kind of hard because there's probably only a few people that are genuine overdogs, but I'm going to throw a spanner as far as, like, I reckon they've only become an overdog in the last week, and that is George Pitar. I just think,
that's who I was going to pick. God damn it. All right, I'll change mine. Keep going.
All right, I could go Sammy Pupo back to back.
Nah, you can stick with George. It's all right.
You've been on a roll, man. I don't want to ruin your roll. People might be following you. No, I'm not. I just think, like,
for the record, we're not counting Challenger Series picks. That's fucking insane.
Fuck off. It's way harder.
No, I know. That's what I mean. I want to ruin my streak by picking people with an 80% draw.
Come on, mate. You know what the ethos is for this podcast. No, but look, whether it's Sammy Pupo, George Pitar, Jacob Wilcox, even, like, these kind of crew that have been on the tour, they obviously are a cut above the rest of the Challenger Series, and I say that with all due respect. They just have that, you know, CT speed is the one thing you can tell. Like, when Sammy Pupo stands up on a wave, compared to whoever it is in the blue rashi that he's got, that they're all automatically just cutting through the water deeper and looking faster. It's sort of similar to, like, Ethan Ewing to Sammy Pupo on the CT. There is just a difference there in speed and power, and it's the same when Sammy comes back to the Challenger Series. It's like, man, that guy should not lose a heat, and he didn't here last year, and I feel the same way for George. Like, George, after getting nines and beating Griff, cleaning everyone up, like, he should just be walking on cloud nine, and he should just be looking to find some quality ocean and do his thing. It really shouldn't be too hard for him this event after how good he's been surfing in Margaret River.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's only right after what he did on the CT that he has a stellar Challenger Series run and makes the CT. So I'll be rooting for George, but if I have to pick another favorite, you know what? I'm going to go totally against the grain, against my own best interests, and I'm going to go double goofy, and I'm going to pick Kaoli Vast.
Ooh.
I think he's another surfer who should and will be on tour, and I have no reason to think it won't start this year, and I have no reason to think it won't start at Snapper this year.
Yeah. Again, similar to Zoe, he had a really good first round heat here last year, but everyone lost with a big total, like even third and fourth, which was the placing that he was in, and first and second just had slightly better scores than the crew they eliminated. So he would be feeling fired up and have redemption on his mind after, yeah, getting pipped at the post last year in a real close heat.
He's a stupidly good surfer. I mean, what he does in Tahiti is on such a different level. He fucking beat Slater going switch out there. But he also, unlike a lot of the other, like, kind of specialist type dudes, like, he's not just a specialist. Like, he can go anywhere. He spent obviously tons of time in France training, and I really like the way he surfs. It's powerful, it's athletic, it's everything that you need to be to do well on the Challenger Series. So I would love to see him do it there. Kaoli Vast is my pick. And I have just one other name that I've just seen him on Instagram a lot over the years, and I actually don't know the full extent of his experience on the Challenger Series, but I actually just saw a clip of him at Snapper, and, like, a true dark horse is, I don't even know how to say his name correctly, but it's, I think, Caua Costa from Brazil. And I don't know, he just has this little bit of X factor in his surfing that it could be something or it could be nothing, but I want to see it in full force here and see what he can do against the world's second best.
Against the world's second best. No, yeah, you're right. And that's the cool thing about the regional series. As much as I think that it has its flaws, you get these crew that qualify through their regions that you've never heard of. So you've got no profile on them at all. And you're paddling out going like, I don't know if this guy does punts or he's good at turns or like, how do I, you know, obviously, you know, you got to surf your own heat too, but like closing out a heat, you're probably looking at him going like, am I blocking him on a closeout or like, or not, you know? So it's cool.
I think you're blocking this guy on a closeout from what I've
seen. Okay, gotcha. Good to know. More free advice. That's great. I like it, Mikey. And yeah, Edgard Grogier was another guy like a couple of years ago. Never heard of him. Never seen him, never had him on Instagram or whatever. And then he comes on the Challenger series and yeah, he's never qualified, but like, fuck, he was always good for like a ninth, you know, he was just ripping. So
I mean, we're due for like a new random Brazilian dude to come and just storm the castle, right? It's been a while, realistically, because we saw Sammy coming, we saw maybe didn't see Joao coming to the extent that he came, like you obviously knew who he was, but I didn't know what he was gonna do, and he impressed, but like we haven't had one in a while that came through that just was like, who is this dude, like an Italo, you know what I mean? And then they just start blowing up.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, I agree. It's time. This could be the year.
Cal Acosta, you heard it here first. I pronounced it wrong, but you heard it here first.
I had never even heard of his name until you said it. So, yes, I have heard it here first, and now I'll be researching profusely. Sounds like he's going to be making a lot of heats, if you're right, Mikey, which you have been right a lot this year.
All right, so before we go, Stacey, let's just make one pick each, one male, one female, who will qualify for the 2024 tour via the Challengers, or sorry, 2025 tour via the Challenger Series. Women, who you got?
Okay, I think we have to take out our favorites from this event.
Oh, you have to take out anybody that's been on the CT before as well. You can't, it needs to be a rookie,
Okay, cool, and you're like, I'm not going to pick George Pitta, because I picked him to win the comp, which you assume if you win in Snapper, you're qualifying. So that's where my heart lies with George. I definitely think he's qualifying. Someone who's going to qualify can I pick my underdog as well? Oh, no, Al Cleland. Al Cleland Jr. Like, there's just no way that guy doesn't belong on the world tour. Like, he is just fucking ridiculous. I would
love to watch him on tour. Yeah, he's so good.
He's a world tour surfer. Like, it's just, there's no two ways about it. So, I think everyone that I've mentioned on the pod so far, George, Joel, and Alan, like, I think all those guys could do it, and I'd be stoked to see him do it. And Al's got some, like, old school energy about him too, you know, like we talk about characters on the tour and I'll be honest, they're few and far between. Like everyone's kind of cut from the same cloth at the minute. Al is cut from a different cloth. He's a respectful young man and he fucking charges and he's not scared of a good time, and I love hanging out with him, and I just love to see him do well because he's a ripper bloke.
Yeah, okay, I really like that pick just because I'd love to see him on tour. All right, so me for the men, I think George as well, but we're not going to go there. So if I have to go through this list, looking at it, it's actually hard because there are a lot of people who have spent a little bit of time on the CT, and then there are some people who I think are going to make the tour someday, but I'm not sure if it's going to be this year just because maybe lack of experience or whatever. But you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just pick one of those people anyway, because I think they would be exciting and I think they would freak some people out. And I think that their surfing is on that level, if yet a little bit unrefined, but it's kind of like beautiful in that way. I'm going to go with the young Shion Crawford from Hawaii.
Nice. Yep. I actually did see him rip on this morning.
If he like locks in, not necessarily at Snapper, I think he would probably like a little bit more push in the wave. Not that Snapper's weak, but it's just not going to be like super punchy. But once he locks in, like I've seen him surf some heats at like Haleiwa and stuff. Obviously that's not on the Challenger Series anymore, unfortunately for him. But I don't know. His surfing is like as powerful and explosive as it gets for someone of his size.
For sure. And we all saw that air that Aliupi just did on the Instagram from the O'Neill Hawaii edit. Like he's freaking gnarly. So yeah, no, I think that's a good call. And then on the women's side, someone who I think definitely belongs there and I think will, you know, give it a really good crack this year is Vahine Fierro. She's my women's pick to go all the way.
Beautiful. I like that. Bit of a brand tick, but also worthy.
Fuck off, mate. If you look at Quicksilver in particular, I realized this as soon as you started working for the company, and you go through the back catalogue, the only person we haven't fucking sponsored is Parco. Like, fair seriously.
All right, okay.
All so right, yeah, it is a brand tick, but fuck you. Like, there's a good team of surfers there, and I'm picking her. So you can stick it up your ass. And what's your pick?
My pick is another one of those people who I think is absolutely. It's actually, it would be an abomination to the human race if she didn't make the CT at some point. And I think that she, her contemporaries have already gone there and done it and proved that they deserve to be there. And this is just another one of our ladybirds that we need to see there. So it is Erin Brooks.
This could be one of two people. Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that. Yeah, okay, Erin Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, Sierra's not doing the full tour, I don't think. Or at least that's pretty much what her dad
said when he was doing the QE. He's like, I'm just doing it for fun.
Yeah, true. I guess we'll see. But yeah, Erin's too good to not make the tour, and yeah, why not this year? So I'm going Erin Brooks on the women's side. Also, that makes me realize that we didn't do a favorite for the women on the snapper side, so we got to do that real quick.
Oh yeah, we did not pick a women's favorite. Favorite for the women's would be, I want to say Alyssa Spencer, just similar to like a Jacob Wilcox or something. Like,
yeah.
Just a cut above the rest. It's been super consistent on the Challenger in the last year. Didn't really find a rhythm on the CT and will no doubt be like furious, to say the least, is one emotion, and fired up is another one. And I think, yeah, she can let it all go here at Snapper.
Yeah, I hope so, because I could also imagine like just putting myself into someone's shoes who had a bad run on the CT. Man, it could be kind of like demoralizing to come back to the CS, and then imagine if you like don't do well in the first event, then you're like, oh man, like what, like is it done? You know what I mean? Like, surfing is such it's such a mental thing. It's such a momentum thing that, yeah, you have to trick yourself a little bit, I think. Like even Eli Hanneman, right? Like he definitely didn't have the run on the CT that he would like, but then he went and I just saw it dropped a huge air at D-Boss. So hopefully that sparks something. You know what I mean? Like you need something to like kick your confidence back in.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think that it'd be nice to happen early. And I think that's the good thing about the cut. Is you get cut and then you come to Snapper. Like, it's not all bad. So hopefully you can kind of keep that rhythm going, not only for Alyssa, but all the surfers that have fallen off to it. And so the stats are really high in the favor of requalifying. So see how she goes.
Sorry, Stace. As we're talking, I'm being very rude and something popped up on my phone and I looked at it. It's an email from the WSL. That says Slater, Fanning, Gilmore, Parco, and Aki will host a super heat on opening day. So Slater's not only in the main event, he's also in the freaking Legends heat, whatever you want to call it. This guy, he retired and he's competing more than he ever has. Like, he's just signing up for more heats.
He did the same thing last year. I love it.
It's
yeah.
So good, he can't help himself. Yeah. I fucking love it. Yeah. Never leave, Kelly. We need you.
How would you feel about seeing a certain surfer DJ in that Heritage Heat?
Are we talking about Dimmy?
Oh, I mean, we'd love to see Shimmy Disco out there, but I was thinking more along the lines of Paul Fisher.
Oh, yes. Get him in there.
I reckon that, like, he's got a concert here next week, and I think that, like, he's surfing better than ever, and I was like, Fisher should definitely be in that Heritage Heat.
Oh, he could fully, he could, because he would try really hard and he would probably beat a few of those people for sure. Yeah. And he would just love it. It would be incredible.
Yeah. Except for Parco, Mick, Kelly, Oki, and Steph, who are all the most competitive people on the planet and absolutely want to bury him.
Yeah, but he would just be making fun of them the whole time and they probably wouldn't be able to. He's so good. Okay, anyway, sorry, we got off track, but before we go, I have to do my women's selection for Overdogs for Snapper, and mine is going to be someone that we already mentioned. She didn't end up in any of our other picks, but I think she could very well win here, which could set up a lifetime of who knows what on the tour, and that's Sierra Kerr. So I think Sierra's going to win this. She's been really, really successful of late. She had a run where she won like four events in a row or something like that, like just stupid consistency, like Nelly Korda shit. So yeah, we're going to go with Sierra.
Lovely. That's a great pick. And I reckon you're going to do pretty well with it, Mikey. I reckon your record could be intact.
All right. I haven't seen any odds up on Bet Online. We're going to try to get them to do the Challenger Series this year as well, just to keep the fun rolling. But, yeah, anything else? We have a bigger feature on the site about the Challenger Series that is written by a very interesting fellow named Nick Gibbs. He wrote a really fun piece that I had to read a few times to fully understand it, but he's a really interesting, good writer, so you can go give that a read. And obviously the event will be on probably pretty much every day. They might try to break the Margs record and go 8 days.
Yeah, let's drag this thing out. 3 heats a day.
Beautiful. All right, well, Stace, you'll be on the mic, yeah?
I'll be on the mic. Bugs is back on the mic. Ronnie, Rich, Felicity. I'm definitely missing someone. But yeah, it's going to be good fun.
All right, tune in. And until next week, over and out.